Gerhardt's back.
The more things change, the more they stay the same.
From NJ1015.com, this is the new Jim Gerhardt Podcast.
I wonder, Bob, if how many people take us for the McKenzie brothers. what was it, Doug, and what was the other's name?
Bob and Doug.
Bob and I'll Doug Bob. McKenzie. we don't have a case of beer under the under
well,
the table here.
Enough room for it.
Okay, I'm Jim Gerhardt, along with Bob Williams. And again, I guess we say that we're here to try to lead the horse to water.
But we've
never been able to make it drink.
No,
we have all the solution to all the states, all the people's problems.
And can you believe this is our last show for the year and for the decade? Isn't that crazy?
Well, I want to get to that very shortly here. Pondering the last decade, the last 10 years, I guess the challenge I would throw out there for anybody, and of course we would ask your response
comments.
To this. Mm-hmm. In the last 10 years, in the last what in the decade has the Jersey government done that's made your life better?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I can't think of anything.
No, there's not been too many notable things. I mean, they've certainly, they've wasted a lot of time.
Well, they did a lot of bickering.
Yeah.
And you nibbled around the edges of our problems here. But yeah. Absolutely. Well, the big problem in New Jersey is it's like a 1,600-pound gorilla. It's bigger than the usual 800. And that's property tax. And nobody will do anything about it. You have to go back, really, to find a time, a governor's term. And it was an abbreviated term. That was the McGreevy governorship back in the middle part of the decade prior to this one, and that anything was accomplished. And this to me is amazing. Here's a governor, Jim McGreevy, who left office and under something of a cloud, and yet during the 3 years he did three notable things. One is reform of the Motor Vehicle Commission, the old DMV,
right,
which was a disgrace. Got that so that at least it's bearable now, what you have to go through. Automobile insurance reform.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was a big squawk. Now I haven't heard too much about that of late. And Easy Pass was a total mess at that time because the prior administration, the Whitman administration, had given the contract for Easy Pass to a company in return for campaign contributions or party donations, and they had no idea how to handle
it.
So
it wasn't working well with the other states.
It didn't work with
systems.
The other states. So
yeah.
McGreevy got that one straightened out. Yeah. Also, after a very rocky start in this particular department, he appointed Rick Fuentes, Colonel Fuentes, as head of the superintendent of the state police, which was a great move. Okay, so anybody has any idea? I could be wrong, but I cannot think of anything that has been done in the last 10 years that really changed anything significantly. So it was 10 years of what they call kicking the can down the road.
Yes.
And building up more and more debt, getting the pension system more and more under, because, of course, every time there's an election campaign, you have to give more out to the people who are entitled group in order to get the votes. So other than buying votes.
Right. But we'll leave that as a running commentary for anybody out there. If you want to make your comments, what was the most important story in New Jersey this past year or the past decade? I was talking to a friend this week. One thing that didn't happen that should have happened, the building of that ARC tunnel.
Yeah.
The transit tunnel. Think about that. If that had been approved back in 2010, 2011, when Governor Christie originally had it on his desk and he vetoed it, if that bill had passed and construction had begun back in 2010, 2011, can you believe that tunnel would be opening right about now? And it probably would be going into service? Mm. Can you believe that?
Well, the idea at the time was that they wanted to take the money that New Jersey would have to put up. And at that particular time when Chris Christie had to make the decision, I believe that the government was not really kicking
correct.
In anything.
Is
that right?
Yes.
And so the whole burden, these billions, would be on the back of New Jersey. His decision was that New Jersey needs that money to take care of the infrastructure as it exists.
Right.
Because
there was nobody helping us.
Prior administrations had spent all the highway tax money.
Right. There was not
on
a big,
other, not on highway
there
taxes.
There was not a big financial coalition between the agencies that would be using that tunnel, and it was just very, very disjointed, yeah. and unfortunately, it's all about a can being kicked down the road.
Yeah,
thing just kept getting kicked, and it still hasn't. It's nowhere near being decided if it's going to be built. Are we going to get a shovel in the ground?
It's difficult though to fault him and lay all the blame on him for that.
But
because circumstances just weren't right.
Yes, correct.
This was the tunnel that was going to come up in Macy's basement, I think. So you could do a little shopping when you're.
Right,
it
was also going to give more access to Penn Station and the transit. Yeah. And right now, a year later, all of that damage with the big hurricane.
Nobody.
So you had a lot of storm damage with the existing tunnel, which is over 100 years old.
Okay, let me a couple of people here. Raymond says taxes went up along with fees. Well, that's that didn't make my life any better.
No, but, no.
That was obvious over the last 10 years. And Alex. It says, New Jersey government today works in complete opposition to improving anything. But good point. Especially if you work, pay taxes, and try to be a good law-abiding citizen. Mm-hmm. One of the fundamental problems here is political careerism. Mm-hmm. That people who are making the decisions on this, making the laws, they are in that as a profession. And so maintaining and preserving, protecting that profession is the top item on their agenda, not what is going to happen to us. Everything, every decision is filtered through the question, what does this do for my next election campaign?
Right.
So I get back to leading the horse to water. We've talked about the only workable way that I have ever been able to dream up to deal with that is GRIP, the concept of get rid of incumbent politicians, which you'll see on my hat. And it takes some patience, but the only way you're going to get a politician's attention to deal with your problems is to threaten his job. Hmm. You're not going to get anywhere debating the morality of a particular issue,
right,
or practicality or the economics of it. It's right down to what is most likely to get him reelected to keep that job. It's the same as you and I would do to keep our job.
Correct. And I think that's a perfect segue to talk about Jeff Van Drew. Jeff Van Drew, obviously, he just voted against impeachment of the president.
One of two
Democrats. And we're just debating. And he's also going to be changing parties, correct?
Well, he says, he's going to switch to the Republican Party. But was it six or seven, I believe it was, of his aides and assistants all resigned. And they've gone to work now, we're told, for his government agency, which, of course, is a Democratic institution. Dan, is that correct?
Yeah, chaired by Frank Pallone.
In other words, Frank Pallone, Congress, hired them.
Well, essentially,
Essentially had them
so
hired.
So the question is, did Van Drew switch because of his nobility, or because he is kowtowing to the wishes of his district, which is a Republican district, and he realizes that if he doesn't reflect the views of his constituents, that he's going to be out on his ear.
Well, this, of course, is fundamental to it. Again, it's preserving the job.
Right.
Jeff Van Drew was good in the legislature, as legislators go. He showed an independence, which is somewhat admirable.
And he was crucified in the media this week for standing up and making that.
See, here's an interesting thing. Yes, he was vilified in media, political circles, for not being loyal to his party.
Right.
Party loyalty. Now, I admire a person who's not loyal to their party,
which
means they gave some thought to something other than that. But the switch, he represented a district that's very heavily Republican. And the only reason that a Democrat got elected to Congress was because the Republican candidate had been somewhat tainted or discredited. Not that he did anything illegal or immoral, but he had lost favor.
Right.
And he was a little bit right, I guess, of the norm in that particular district. And so certainly Jeff Van Drew, as a Democrat, has to be aware of that, because in 2 years he's going to want to get reelected to keep the job.
Mm-hmm.
So he switched. Now, you could put it down to a matter of principle, or you could say he's covering his backside, or all of above, which I would like to think. Right. Here's how things change. Go back to John Kennedy's Kennedy wrote a book called Profiles in Courage. You won a Pulitzer Prize. Remember
that?
Oh,
I'll tell you about that one, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so he wrote Profiles in Courage. This was about members of Congress who had shown exceptional courage. And one of them, one of the main ones, was after the Lincoln assassination. The president was Johnson.
Yes.
It was right on the tip of my tongue. What was his first name?
Andrew?
Andrew Johnson. Andrew Johnson, yeah. I was thinking of Jackson. Andrew Johnson became the president, and they brought impeachment charges against Andrew Johnson. I don't remember why, but the very parallel to what's going on right now. Now, the member of the Senate who crossed party lines to stop the impeachment conviction was the one that Kennedy had hailed as showing great courage because he had crossed party lines, defied party loyalty, and had voted against the conviction after the impeachment process, and that he was hailed as a man of great courage. Now, Jeff Van Drew does the same thing, and he is, what, an apostate, a heretic.
Yeah.
I tell you, looking for reasons, I was reminded T.S. Eliot, the famous poet, had written a play called Murder in the Cathedral. And this was about the murder, the assassination, and I believe it was the 13th century of the Archbishop of Canterbury, Thomas à Becket, because King Henry II, who was on the throne at the time, had sort of scratched his head over some opposition that the Archbishop had given him. And he just shook his head at dinner one day and said, how do I get rid of this meddlesome priest? Well, a couple of knights heard that and said, ha-ha, we're going to get some brown points. So they go up and assassinate the Archbishop. But in the play, in the second act of Murder in the Cathedral, is a great line, and I think this might apply to Jeff Van Drew. He said, this last temptation is the final treason, to do the right thing for the wrong reason. And again, I think he may have done the right thing for the wrong reason. I admire him for doing that,
yeah,
really.
Yeah, I do too.
Because if nothing else, it's kind of good to just break loose from this lockstep party loyalty. Okay.
Quick story about Profiles in Courage.
Yeah.
We were visiting up at UMass a couple of years ago, and we went to the Kennedy Museum up there. Mm-hmm. I believe the library's up there on the campus of UMass. Went to the gift store, and we saw the audio version of Profiles in Courage.
Uh-huh.
So we had about a four-hour ride home. I said, let's pick it up. We'll listen to it on our way home. And the narrator was JFK Jr., John John.
Hmm.
So we figured, okay, you know, the son of the author is going to do a pretty good job. Jim, when I tell you, after 10 minutes, we almost threw the disc out the window because, God rest his soul, but John John is not a great orator. He was just brutal. I almost fell asleep. It was just not effective as a narrator. So I never really got through the book. I was really hoping to. But I was like, you know, yeah. Kathleen and I looked at each other like, is this John John? Really? Oh, turn this off. It's like brutal.
Let's go back now to people watching this. Bert Fox. Bert says, you guys are really asking a difficult question. The question, if you didn't hear it, was what has the government done in the last 10 years that made your life better? What positive? He said, you should be asking about how much stuff Murphy said he was going to do versus what he didn't get done.
Well, he's got daily briefings telling us what he's doing, and I don't think it's helping many people.
Well, he's being, you know, miscongeniality.
He's using social media to his benefit, yeah. I guess.
Legalize weed, the list goes on and on. Well, lots of broken promises. Well, that's par for the course. But I guess that's valid question, because we're still in that decade, I guess, for a couple of weeks or a week,
right,
or what have you.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Adriana. She's probably got the line of the day. Adriana says, I don't think I've ever heard one person in my life ever say, let's move to New Jersey. Mic drop, Adriana.
When I was living in other parts of the country, you know, moving around as radio announcers generally did, And you'd see these New Jersey tourism spots come up. Governor Kane, you know, New Jersey puffing together. Everybody would break out in uncontrollable laughter. He's saying, come to New Jersey. But, okay, so that brings up the, what's the moving company, Dan? Talking to Dan Alexander now. Who takes the survey about people moving into a state and moving out of a state?
Unfortunately, I don't know offhand.
United Van Lines?
I think it's United Van Lines. Okay. Well, it doesn't matter. It's okay. A moving company, a big one. They did their annual survey, and they find out that New Jersey is the second state for people moving out. More people moving out than moving in. Now, 62% of people who have used their van line anyway have 62% moving out, which would leave 38% of people as opposed to people moving in.
Right.
Now, I don't know who the people moving in are. We all know people are moving out, whether they're being snuck in or what's happening there.
And what if we know, I guess we don't know what the number one state of people moving out.
Oh, speaking of that, Ron. Hey, Ron. Ron says it has improved my life by convincing me to move. Oh, everybody thinks of that. Okay.
True that, Ron. True that.
Okay, so we'll see what happens with Jeff Van Drew. I rather admire him for doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And it'll be interesting to see now. In 2 years, he has to run again.
Right.
So, all right, what's next on the agenda here? Dan, you brought up something early. You got a moment?
Yes.
Dan Alexander is our ace writer. If you look at the website, the news, you'll see all these great stories written by Dan Alexander.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you brought up something. I wasn't aware of this, but it is an interesting thing, and it's kind of an ongoing thing.
Yes.
In two regards. One is in regard to the subject, and the other is in regard to the response to the subject.
Well, yeah. It was a school committee woman from Jersey City.
School
committee woman.
Okay.
Yeah. And she wrote a piece for on her Facebook page, and she basically just give me a moment, I'll pull up the story here.
Oh, sure.
Just so I can sound somewhat intelligent.
Justifying what happened.
This we're getting into here, and Dan's getting the specifics here so we don't go astray, is to me that what's behind it is more than the story. It's the fact that somebody says something that is possibly true, but certainly not a capital crime.
Right.
And yet they get totally vilified for it if it happens not to be in lockstep with the politically correct opinion du jour. And this is what we're dealing with. So Dan, what...
So the school board member, her name is Joan Terrell Page, and she wrote on her personal Facebook page, in fact, she even wrote on the page, this is me talking, not I'm not speaking as part of the school board.
She made that clear.
Yeah, it was her own personal opinion. She wrote, quote, where was all this faith and hope when black homeowners were threatened, intimidated, and harassed by, and in capital letters, I want to buy your house, brutes of the Jewish community. And then she also wrote about an aggressive manner in which black residents are being intimidated and the, quote, the assault on the black communities of America, which is sometimes that practice is called, as you know, blockbusting.
Blockbusting, yeah.
She also wrote without elaborating that, quote, we learned six rabbis were accused of selling body parts. Some online commentators have pointed out this might be an inaccurate reference to the anti-corruption Operation Big Rig takedown 2009 that snared Hudson County politicians as well as five rabbis charged with money laundering and a Jewish Israeli citizen who pleaded guilty to trying to illegally sell a human kidney. And on it goes.
Just an observation, those two are unrelated, really. Blockbusting and what happened in, 10 more years ago, the famous Jersey.
I think the point she was trying to make was that everyone was coming around the Jewish community, which has settled in that particular the Greenville neighborhood of Jersey City, where the shooting took place
in
recent years.
It's
become a growing Jewish neighborhood. Yes. There's a lot of yeshivas there. That J.C. Grosser was kind of the center of the community. And I think that her point was that while everyone is talking about how this community grew, she's talking about how it grew in her eyes, that the black community, which was also there, was kind of pushed out.
So she's speaking specifically about that. She's not talking about the Lakewood, the Jackson, the Mawa.
She's just kind of making the comparison to that same practice.
I guess it elevated to the point where people thought that she was condoning the behavior or justifying the brutal behavior of
right,
those people.
Right.
Okay.
So
the upshot of it was that all hell broke loose.
Well, Mayor Stephen Phillip and Governor Murphy both called for her to resign. Mm-hmm. And tonight the Jersey City School Board is going to there's going to be a resolution calling for her to resign, and they're going to censure her as well tonight at the meeting.
The thing is, if they want to censure everybody who feels that this expansion of these communities, Orthodox communities, if anybody who raised an eyebrow at that or had a problem with it, 2/3 of the population of Ocean County would have to be ostracized, I think, because we've heard that lots, buying out the property. She's relating it, though. It's interesting because it's an exact opposite of the original term blockbusting, right, which was used when the black communities were moving into so almost vacated white enclaves in your cities. That goes back many and many a year. So that's what she's complaining about.
But the fact that there was, murder and apparently domestic terrorism involved in this incident, I guess you cannot equate that when the incident escalated to that deadly level.
But to me, the essence of this thing is, here's someone on Facebook, which is supposed to be private. We all know it isn't. And if you want to keep it private, Facebook does its best to be sure that, everybody in the world gets it.
But that's the issue, and not only with this individual, but with anybody else in a public position.
Yes.
You can have a public website, you can have your private thing, and if you profess your opinion on your private site, it really just messes with your public persona.
And if
it jades your public persona. It sides you to one side.
And if
you're
you have
objective anymore.
If you have an opinion that is inconsistent with the politically correct view, as I said, du jour, then not only should you be corrected, mm-hmm, if you would, if you're wrong, correct. Like the lady in South Jersey who had talked about Hispanic, what parents didn't watch their children. I mean, that's very easy to refute that and say, look, well, you're wrong here. And she might say, oh, gosh, I didn't know that. I just heard the other things. And no real harm done. But you have to be really annihilated. They have to try to ruin you. Now, this lady, once all this censorship and everything is done, going to have one hell of a time getting a job. And there's going to be the whole liberal establishment's going to be after her constantly thing. They won't let up. Her life.
On her Facebook page, she hasn't posted since middle of November.
Uh-huh.
And every comment on every post on her Facebook page, people are commenting about this particular, about that post, even though it's no longer there. People are just, they're just comment, she could put a picture up of a puppy and people are going to talk
about
this.
But what we've gotten to, and it's just this is one instance, Bob, as you have suggested, of a very bad, very sad, broad pattern here. And it goes back, Pope Innocent III, who was the Pope during the 13th century. And so this is idea that you not only should try to refute any other opinion, but you should actually try to exterminate the person who had the gall to do it. Pope Innocent issued a decree. He said, quote, "Anyone holding an opinion of God that is in variance with church doctrine shall be burned without mercy." 800 years, same church, different pew,
right,
I guess.
Not much has changed.
Moving right along here. There's talk. Oh, there's a group. They're proposing a new increase in the gasoline tax.
I didn't hear much about that. What's going on?
Well, I don't have any figures, and this is not in the legislature yet, but it has some pretty high-powered backing here. They were supposed to raise the gasoline tax to raise money for New Jersey Transit.
This is what this increase would go for.
That's what increase would go for.
I thought we just passed a threshold where they said they weren't going to raise.
This is a different gas tax.
A different one. Okay. We're already up like 39
and
cents.
New and improved gas tax.
We're already,
yeah,
we're
only $19.95 plus shipping and
39
handling.
39 cents, mm-hmm. I believe, the new gas tax over the last 3 years. That's what that has been.
Yeah.
So we've got another one, Dan. What's the?
This is
so. Let me. David Matha wrote about this earlier in the week.
Oh, good.
It says, I'm reading from David's article. The Transportation and Climate Initiative, a regional collaboration of several states, including, is pushing a plan to cut carbon emissions, reduce pollution, and expand the use of clean energy and transportation. TCI is releasing a memorandum of understanding by the end of the month that calls for 12 Northeast and Mid-Atlantic states, including New Jersey and the District of Columbia, to adopt a cap and invest system. The system would force gasoline and diesel fuel companies to essentially pay a type of tax for the pollution that their product creates. The money raised, an estimated $3 billion a year, would go towards improving transportation. The plan calls for a multi-state auction, and anybody who is producing and selling gasoline that is used in transportation would need to buy credits to actually sell that gasoline. So there would be an absolute carbon emission cap set, and you would buy allowances up to that cap. The cost of buying gasoline credits would likely be passed on to the consumer.
Well, of course.
Of course.
Who else?
It could, quote, it could be anywhere from 5 cents a gallon as high as 17 cents a gallon on the most aggressive estimates they've produced so far. So instead of it being a tax, the New Jersey state gas tax would remain in place, whatever that amount would be.
And
then on top of that, the price of gas would just go up.
Yeah. Well, all right, let's see. J.D., interesting comment here from J.D. 49 other states in the union, so if New Jersey is so miserable, why not move out? You know why people stay. It's because we make money here. I think it's more than that. Which is one of the problems, as has often been said. New Jersey is a great place to live if you can afford it.
Yeah.
And as Wayne Bryant, a former state senator who got himself in a little bit of trouble, not over this, but as he once said, when somebody brought that up to him, he said, well, you can't afford to live here. Somebody was complaining about, you know, needing some help and how can we make it and take care of the family. He says, if you can't afford it, move out. And he was not a cruel man, so I think he just meant it as a practical matter. J.D., though, says it may not be the best place, but it's far from the worst. Why not have all the privileged people shut up, leave, and be happy elsewhere? The rest of us won't miss you. I'll bet you won't go. I don't want to go. I don't think I'll go.
I like to go on days like today when it's 12 degrees, or like yesterday when we had that incredible snow squall, mm-hmm. and I couldn't see 5 feet in front of me on the road. Mm-hmm. That's when I want to get out of here.
You see, one reason I want to stay is I love the people in New Jersey. I mean, a lot of people would say, well, you know, I don't like their attitude. I think it's great. I love the people here. I've lived in other parts of the country, a good number of them, and I never really felt that comfortable with people because maybe I'm brashing out of line, too. I don't know. It goes right along with it. Eddie says, the state will not improve until we vote out all Democrats. And I would add to Eddie's and Republicans. They've been in control even with Republican governors, so things have not improved in the last decade.
Term limits, Eddie.
This
term
is very
limits.
True, Eddie, but do remember, go back beyond this last decade into the decade before that when we had a Republican governor and a Republican legislature, both houses of it. They didn't do a blasted thing either.
Crazy.
And it said you kick the can down the road, rent up more. The basic activity of the government, the members of the government, is buying votes with public funds, with your money.
Your money
and
work,
as
your
notably said by a journalist named Sherry Sylvester one time, and I should have this embroidered on my sampler and hung by the hearth to ponder over a cold winter's night, there is little legislation in New Jersey that does not create a financial opportunity for somebody. Oh, here's a positive one. Lisa, thank you so much for this. Lisa said, I got a very good education at Rutgers. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm sure you could do that.
A lot of people do.
Yeah. And I'm sure somebody will call in. Nobody's going to call in and say because of the Rutgers football
right,
team.
Yeah. Love that football program.
Very few people would do that. What else we got going here? The driver's license for illegals, people in the country.
That is a done deal?
It's a done deal. Dan, isn't that not a done deal?
The governor's signing it today
and tell us how wonderful he is.
Terrific. Great.
Okay, so we have driver's license.
And you know what that means? I would just pontificate and say that I think we're just going to wait for the other shoe to drop with the auto insurance, because who's going to cover the liability? You, me, and everybody who has auto insurance. Now, does that mean illegals can get auto insurance? They can apply for that?
I have no idea how it works. I think there's a lot of questions here. For example, when you go to register, aren't you pretty much automatically registered to vote at the same time when you go to the Motor Vehicle Bureau now?
It's a different procedure.
But they have access to that database.
Right. When you go renew your license or go to whatever, you have the option when you're there, you can register to vote.
Yes.
It doesn't mean that but when you get a license, you're not automatically registered to vote. You still have to go through
the
process.
But you could if you wanted to.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, what this is all about is getting the vote for people. What, 500,000 people, they say, in the state illegally? That seems like a lot of people. But that's what's said.
If everybody
that's
voted,
a whole lot of Democratic votes.
That would certainly tip an election.
And they're going to get Democratic votes. The Democrats are tongues hanging out, panting over the prospect of this, as they are about increasing the mail-in ballot thing, which offers all kind of opportunities for chicanery.
Right.
And they're going to get the votes because they have been smart enough to position themselves as the patron of immigration, and which is a very smart thing to do. Republicans, who actually, during the Bush administration, the second Bush, opened the floodgates for illegal immigration because they thought it was going to help business.
Yeah.
And it never occurred to them that not two out of the whole migration are going to vote Republican. So this is what it's all about. And now you see it's incrementally we get used to this now. I don't know why. Look, this is something faced facts. They're all going to be here. Now, there are some people being deported, and I understand that the Obama administration deported many more people than the current one, although nobody tells you that. But this is going to be the future.
Right.
Why not simply declare a total amnesty to everybody, no matter how you got here, and say, okay, now we're going to draw the line. You're here. You vote. You do everything under the sun, get all the privileges, which generally you do now anyway. But we're not going to let any more people in until we get this settled down, figure out whether our economy can handle it or not.
Yeah.
But that's going to be awfully hard.
Interesting.
But essentially what this fight is over votes. And power, political power.
Who's going to bat for the illegals? And obviously they're going to grateful. The illegal citizens will be grateful, and then they'll vote for those that fought for them.
Yep. Mm-hmm. That's human nature, and people,
You want to talk about the opting out for vaccinations?
Yeah, that's a very interesting thing, too. What happened is the legislature, the assembly, had voted to end the religious opt-out for childhood inoculations. It went to the Senate. The Senate is stalling because the senators now are checking to see which vote is best to protect my occupational backside, to keep the job. What's going to affect me most in the next election, which is, of course, their stake now. How they're going to come down, I do not know. But see, that's a tough one. And this is where government has really messed in its own nest, because people do not trust not only government, but you do not trust the organizations, the corporations who are in effect running the government through. Do you realize that lobbyists pay I think it's the pharmaceutical industry alone spends $22 million a year in lobbying for each member of the Congress. This is not specifically for, but the total amount they spend, and you divide that by 535 members of Congress. So and in return for that, you get pretty much to call the shots. So again, there's a lot of distrust for the government that says it's good for everybody to have these inoculations,
and that there's
there are commercial interests in this too, because somebody's making the product.
Yeah,
and this is not necessarily evil. It may be that this is preventing all manner of epidemics and pandemics. I do not know, but the problem is we do not know.
Right
now, if people can opt out, if a mandatory vaccination program is going to prevent epidemics, pandemics, and what, a dozen different possible diseases or complaints, then...
Remember when people were lining up, everybody was lining up for the Nile virus vaccination. Mm-hmm. That was a pretty big story this past decade. I mean, I remember lining up outside the senior center in town, waiting about 2 hours.
Why? You're not a senior, are you?
No. That's where they had the inoculations.
Okay.
But I was lined up out there with the family, and everybody was crazed with that inoculation. But I mean, these religious exemptions. I mean. You think about it. We're talking basic flu shots here, aren't we?
Well, I don't think flu shots part
measles,
of it. No,
right?
We're talking about childhood inoculation.
Right, like measles and...
Of course, always against smallpox. That's been going for years. We all got that 100 years ago. But now, if these inoculations make a person immune for these possible outbreaks, then... If there is an outbreak, they should not be concerned about it. The people who should be concerned, if this is all true, are going to be the ones who are not inoculated. And so this would be a logical consequence of their actions.
Right.
So the fact that we are so suspicious, and it is the government now because the legislature is voting on this, in other words, want to establish that every child born, every suckling babe, and shortly beyond, gets how many shots, Dan? Do you know how? I forget how many there are. Like dozens or so.
I don't know offhand. Different. I'm not being a dad. I'm not sure.
Uh huh. Well, you're not heeding the biblical admonition to be fruitful and multiply. Shame.
Replenish the earth.
You're not replenishing the earth. Right. Okay, but it's a hard one. It's a very hard one. I sympathize with both sides. If what we are told. By the government, by the pharmaceutical companies, by the medical industry, which is an industry now. Money rules in that, too, as I've said a number of times. We have Henry Ford now as the patron saint of medicine, replacing Saint Mark. Mm-hmm. Because you try to go to a doctor, you see they all have sold out to a system. The system is only interested in how much money they can generate. And on the side, if the doctor has time, he might dispense some good some good advice, but he's limited because he has a quota. And this is true, I know, because I've been told that by a number of doctors. So if what they tell you is true, then it is a good thing.
I just spoke with Erin Vogt, our colleague in the newsroom. She says that at least a dozen shots is what kids get between between 6 months and 18 years.
So you're putting chemicals, you're putting things into human bodies that were not meant to be there by dint of our physiology and our makeup. Hopefully that this will do something good. But I can understand if people don't believe that. Because there are many people, and certainly holistic medicine, for example, is getting very, very big now, who believe that the human body was designed pretty much to take care of itself.
Right, to fight off its own.
Mm-hmm. So it's one of those things that you can see some logic in both sides
of
this
thing.
So you
think there's a happy medium to be found?
I don't know what it would be, because the government wants all, total. And there would not be exceptions, unless some child is in some medical danger because of this.
Now, do you get inoculated on a regular basis?
I had a flu shot. I had a pneumonia shot.
Yeah, same here.
I've had a, what's the term? For heaven's sakes. What is the outbreak?
Measles.
Not measles. It goes beyond that. It's similar to that.
Yeah. Ebola?
Not scurvy. What am I... somebody will know what I'm talking about.
What was it?
For heaven's sweet sake, it just won't come to me. Anyway, I had another shot.
Okay.
In the world? This is craziness.
I had a flu shot last year. I get one every year. For the first time last year, I actually got the flu for a couple of days.
I remember when you did that.
Last November. But for years, I've had a flu shot and I never had an issue. But all of a sudden, last year, this year, no problems. I had the flu and I had the pneumonia, and I figure, it can't hoit, as it were.
I'm still trying to figure out what I'm talking about. Help me, Dan.
So we're running.
Well, they have signs up at pharmacies urging you to get this shot.
There's the flu. There's shingles.
Shingles. Yeah, okay. There we go. Yeah, shingles. Thank you, Dan.
So you had that?
I had a shingle shot.
That's good.
Yeah.
What do I win, Bob?
You win.
Hey, you know, speaking of holistic medicine, I've had an interesting problem this Christmas because I have a birthday coming up soon, a couple of days.
I'll be right back.
Okay, but I have a birthday coming up. So I get presents from family, from people, and everybody sends meat. And I'm a vegetarian.
Ah.
I'm on a very strict vegan diet. May come off it, but right now I'm purely plant-based whole foods diet. And so I get all these packages of meat, prepared stuff. I eat no processed food, of course, coming in. So I have to trot down daily to UPS sending the meat back to people.
Oh.
And trying to apologize. Because, you know, I never thought about broadcasting my diet among people.
Did somebody say birthday?
Holy mackerel.
Ready? Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you.
Oh, thank you.
Happy birthday, dear Jim.
Thank you, Karen.
Happy birthday to you.
Ha 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 ha! You did it.
Happy birthday, buddy.
You want to tell him how old I am?
No, right.
Why?
Is it all right?
Yeah, sure, it's all right.
I believe you are the double eights.
I will be.
Double eight.
Well, and the way we count it, I'll be 88 Saturday. Mm-hmm.
But the way I
count it, like in the East and the Orient, they count the year that you're in, and so therefore I will claim that I'm 89.
That's fine.
And I don't know why.
From your neighborhood?
And people say, well, you said you're 89. If you do the math, you're only 88. Well, why do you say? Because everybody wants to be younger.
Well, I'll tell you something. I hope I look like you and do what you're
holy
doing
mackerel.
when I'm 88. Hopefully I'll get
there.
Well,
I'm sure you will. You are just
an incredible.
Well, everybody can get
incredible
there.
Incredible person.
Yeah, I think it's a
and
matter.
You've already
of...
shared your secrets of longevity.
Really?
No Big Macs. And,
I had a Big Mac. I did in 1972. I had a
no
Big Mac.
No Big Macs, folks.
I loved it.
Stop eating
and I thought,
now.
I can't do this.
Well, listen, we really love you here. You're a fixture here at the radio station.
That's very nice of everybody.
You know, and thanks to Karen and also a couple other people here at birthdays. Dennis and Jessica have birthdays today.
Yeah, thank you. Dan, you have a birthday Saturday too.
Yep.
Right? Dan
Happy
Alexander.
Happy birthday, Danny.
So okay. So
a lot of great December birthdays.
Beautiful. What kind of a cake is that?
It's
not a vegetable. It's not a broccoli cake.
No.
Looks
pretty chocolatey to me, Jim.
I said thank you to Karen because she's the only person I could see looking around here, but to everybody.
And Jennifer back
that
there.
That is very, very nice of you. Yeah, I really appreciate that.
Well,
see, I love it here.
Yeah. Well, we love having you here, and here's to another great year together, and we're going to do it again right after the first of the year.
After the first of the year.
January 2nd, we'll be back.
And let me again mention that we... we do encourage you to participate in this. One thing that I do miss when you're on the air, as I was for 26 years doing the morning show, that it's an immediate give and take and you have immediate feedback from what you're doing. And this is a little more complicated, but it's worth a try and a shot. But we'd like to depend a lot on you. So, a lot of people say happy birthday.
There you go.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
And a Merry Christmas to everybody.
To everybody.
Have a great holiday season.
And have a great year.
Wait, okay. I can't do that. I'm not going to try.
I can still do that.
Mr. Spock.
Live long and prosper, which is good. Yeah. So thanks, and have yourself a great Christmas, a wonderful Christmas. It's a great season. Yeah. Can we do one more quick thing? I was the legend of Holiday Man.
Okay, Bill Spady says he's going to play Holiday Man on the air
Monday. Okay, so we'll let it go at that.
He's going to end his show Monday morning at about 10 to 10 with Holiday Man.
Okay, Holiday Man is something that... we'll wait and let Bill do it. It's on Monday morning.
Yep, right as he's ending the show. He's going to end the show with Holiday Man.
Okay, shortly before 10 o'clock.
It's a parody that we did years ago about the politically correct Christmas and the outrage against it.
All right. Hey, thank you, Ron. Ron DeCastro, our great general manager here, is one of the nicest, greatest, most competent people I've run into in all of my years.
And he probably paid for the cake.
Even
better,
hope he comes and gets a piece of the cake. Hey, listen, again, I got to go. And just Thank you, pal, for your support and your friendship. Appreciate it. And same, Dan, and everybody. Thanks a lot,
buddy.